So what are we talking about next?
Next is 1999's, probably his most successful movie as far as accolades.
Yeah.
Least amount of gunshots.
I mean, Heat made the most money, but The Insider, best picture, right?
Yep.
Best actor, too, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Best director. And I think writing, he got nominated for writing as well.
Yeah. Is 1999's The Insider. About Jeffrey Wigand, a whistleblower for a tobacco company, like the third tobacco company that no one ever hears about, like Emerson. I want to say Emerson, Lake and Palmer, but it's like Blake Nelson and
all I remember. The short and it's BMW.
Yes, okay, BMW. So he leaks. He ends up leaking to Jeff Bergman, Lowell Bergman from 60 Minutes, some like chemical potency reports or like ignition studies or something that, you know, leads to the conclusion that they're, you know, engineering them for addictiveness, the chemicals in the cigarettes. And it's really just about the inner politics of the news business being responsible for releasing this information and the companies trying to stop it. But I think what's interesting is that it was made like in the middle of the entire thing.
Yeah.
Like as it was going on, like as they were making the movie, like 60 Minutes hadn't aired the interview yet.
Yeah.
So it was based mostly on a Vanity Fair piece that someone had written about Jeffrey Wigand, but man, like hung out with Lowell Bergman because they were looking to do a movie together. Mm-hmm. Like based on some story he had done at some point.
I thought it was Mike Wallace.
Mike Wallace is the reporter.
Okay, 60 Minutes.
Yeah, Bergman is the producer.
That's Bergman is Pacino.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. The Bling Ring too that just is out now with Sofia Coppola. I think are the two movies that are.
Did not expect that.
No, because they're both movies that are coming out before, like the Bling Ring. They're on trial right now.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah,
and so both of these movies have that in common, that they're both ongoing trials.
And like this, when he's giving the deposition, like that's the same room
where
Jeffrey Wigand
literally the same deposition.
That's his whole thing, isn't it? Like he...
reality.
And all of the commentaries I've kind of glossed over or special features talk about how he likes going to the places when he can.
Yeah.
He likes getting artifacts.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that the woman was the same as from Heat.
Oh, yeah.
And I hated her in this. I hated her in this. She was such a bitch.
What about in Romeo and Juliet?
I don't remember her in Romeo and Juliet.
She's Juliet's mom.
Oh, I need to see that again. Yeah. I don't remember her mom at all. I was way too...
high?
Yep. In love with Leonardo DiCaprio to pay attention to anyone else.
She's really good.
In this, she's a bitch.
So everybody saw this.
Surprise.
Yes.
She's stopping the man from achieving their goal. It's like a Todd Phillips movie.
Yeah.
So many good character actors in this one as well.
Oh,
but
so good.
Let's talk about the main guy. Russell Crowe.
He's great.
Gained a lot of weight for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of those things.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's easier for him than some people though.
Yeah. I mean, Russell Crowe's like his muscle would chewy. Just turn into meat. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's awesome. He's really good.
Oh yeah.
Totally subdued. And like being crazy man had him like work for a week or something at a chemistry lab so that he knew what it was like to hunch over the tables. Yeah. Like he had that back knowledge, you know, for the character.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's insane, like classic Hollywood like method stuff, but it works. When it works, it really works.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Christopher Plummer is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I actually have, we were talking about, I've got a few clips from The Insider because this could also be called yelling the movie. Everyone's best scene involves them yelling really loud at somebody.
Yeah.
But this, we were talking about the room of the testimony, Bruce McGill as his attorney is amazing.
Yeah.
So let's play this.
Dr. Wigand, I am instructing you not to answer that question. In accordance to the terms of the contractual obligations undertaken by you, not to disclose any information about your work at the Brown and Williamson Tobacco Company, and in accordance with the force and effect of the temporary restraining order that has been entered against you by the court in the state of Kentucky. That means you don't talk. Mr. Motley, we have rights here.
Well, you got rights. And lefts. Ups and downs and middles. So what?
You don't get to instruct anything around here. This is not North Carolina, not South Carolina, nor Kentucky. This is the sovereign state of Mississippi's proceeding. Wipe that smirk off your face! Dr. Weigand's deposition will be part of this record. And I'm going to take my witness's testimony, whether the hell you like it or not.
Bruce McGill is a badass.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. And that comes like out of nowhere.
Yeah. In the movie. I think, I don't know if this was in the commentary, but I know that was all Bruce McGill, like improvised.
Really?
The smirk thing. That was all. Watching the commentary, he's like, yeah, that was awesome. Like,
man's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's him.
That's why Bruce McGill is in more than two movies.
Yeah. If you've noticed, I've only cast.
So you gave a synopsis for this, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's like the inner politics of the news business is pretty much what the entire thing is about. You know, the legal proceedings that they bring forth to stop the interview, because the interview will, you know, expose information. CBS in the middle of being bought by Westinghouse, not wanting to muddy those financial waters, to make themselves liable to, you know, a $1 billion lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And it's all about kind of his decision whether or not to go forward with it, but also, like, are his motives as pure as, you know, they're portrayed to be. And it's got that pace, that Michael Mann, like, kind of slow, methodical building pace, a lot of silences. It's 2.5 hours because 20 minutes is just people looking at things.
Yeah.
Staring
out of windows or looking around their room, and the room fills in with, like, their dream of a happy home.
I really enjoy the opening of this movie with Al Pacino. Visiting, was it the Ayatollah?
Yes.
That's hardcore. Like, that's, I remember when I first watched this, it scared me. I was like, oh, man. And then it's funny watching, I don't know if anybody's watching Vice on HBO. One of the guys in Vice, it's a show on HBO that's investigative journalism type show. It's 30 minutes, 3 pieces per episode. And one of the guys in the first episode visits one of the guys from the Taliban, like straight up in Afghanistan. And so he's like hooded. They hood him up. They go, and it feels exactly like the beginning of The Insider, where you're like, if this guy asks the wrong questions, he's gonna be fucking shot in the face. That's how it feels. But very authentic. It was definitely very. Ugh. And I like the scene where, like, he hears something out in the backyard. What's his name? Russell Crowe. And he goes out there, he gets the gun. So intense.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, but I feel bad for not seeing this movie earlier, because I remember every time I saw the trailer, I'm like, that looks badass and creepy and just scary and in a nice, subtle way that I would really enjoy. And I did really enjoy this movie. I really liked it a lot, and I felt bad about not seeing it. But I have to jump ahead to Miami Vice, where I'm like, all right, Miami Vice is an action shoot 'em up about undercover vice agents or vice police officers. And it is 0.5% as exciting as The Insider is, which is about news. Yeah. It's about telling a news story.
Yeah.
And it's just so thrilling and suspenseful and, like, edge of your seat. And, like, I was alone in the house at, like, 12 o'clock, like, at midnight watching this almost 3-hour long movie. And I was riveted the whole time. Meanwhile, Miami Vice, I'm like, can this movie fucking end already? So I guess I'm showing my hand for what Miami Vice is going to be. But just, like, yeah, it's just like, man, he can do so well with just this really simple story about the politics of, which politics in general and the politics of the legality of news stories and what people need to know and when they need to know it, and, like, just getting the information out. And it's just so fascinating. But, and just the stuff, like the bullet in the mailbox and the scene in the backyard with the gun.
Yes.
And just all the stuff with his family and, like, the following, the scene. Okay. The scene at the driving range is more tense than shootouts in Miami Vice.
Yeah.
And they're at a driving range. It's two dudes at a driving range and they turn the lights off and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
It's funny. One of my favorite scenes also is just the phone call that Al Pacino's making while he's on the beach on his cell phone.
Yes. Tell him to get on the fucking phone.
Yeah.
I can't do that, sir. Yes. Just tell him.
Yeah.
Mr. Bergman says to please get on the fucking phone. I've got, you were talking about the politics and the Pacino speech. So there's, we've got three examples of fine yelling: Bruce McGill, Al Pacino, and Christopher Plummer. But this is like the classic, this is the one that's repeated everywhere, Pacino's thing with the news.
Yeah.
You hear reasonable and tortious interference. I hear potential Brown and Williamson lawsuit jeopardizing the sale of CBS to Westinghouse. I hear shut the segment down, cut Wigand loose, obey orders, and fuck off. That's what I hear.
You're exaggerating.
I am? You pay me to go get guys like Wigand, to draw him out, to get him to trust us, to get him to go on television. I do. I deliver him. He sits, he talks. He violates his own fucking confidentiality agreement. And he's only the key witness in the biggest public health reform issue, maybe the biggest, most expensive corporate malfeasance case in U.S. history. And Jeffrey Wigand, who's out on a limb, does he go on television and tell the truth? Yes. Is it newsworthy? Yes. Are we going to air it? Of course not. Why? Because he's not telling the truth. No, because he is telling the truth. That's why we're not going to air it. And the more truth he tells, the worse it...
I don't know why I cut off with this. The worse it gets.
Yeah.
God, Pacino's good.
Yeah, and it's funny.
Twice, never again.
Yeah. I watched that documentary he made, Looking for Richard III.
Yeah.
And knowing him, like, seeing that documentary now, like, and seeing his work, you could tell why he's just so good with words. And, like, good with... Given all these lines that are in this movie, or in any of Pacino's movies, given to another actor, they would say them differently.
He's got a good sense of rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like he knows how to make dialogue poetry, if that makes any stupid sense. But yeah.
No, it's like the thing with the great ass. Like, it's just those outbursts. Like, give that to anyone else.
And it'd be cheesy.
Yeah, and it'd be weird. And
yeah.
Well, I mean, you have an example of that with Scott Plank in L.A. Takedown.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Is there anything else we want to cover with this?
That Christopher Plummer outburst you want to hear with Christopher the girl? Plummer?
Oh, yeah, here we go.
Is that the one that you put on there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
You can't not have that one.
I know.
Okay.
Tougher than ever.
Where's the rest?
Dan?
Where the hell's the rest?
Nebraska football fans voice their criticism.
You cut it! You cut the guts out of what I said.
It was the time consideration,
Mike. Bullshit! You corporate lackey. Who told you your incompetent little fingers have the requisite skills to edit me? I'm trying to band-aid a situation here, and you're too dim to...
Mike?
Try Mr. Wallace. We work in the same corporation doesn't mean we work in the same profession. What are you going to do now? You're going to finesse me? Lawyer me some more? I've been in this profession 50 fucking years. You and the people you work for are destroying the most respected, the highest rated, the most profitable show on this network.
So good. Yeah, and so Plummer is so great, but then at the same time, I also just picture Mike Wallace actually saying that. I'm like, fuck
yeah. Yeah.
50
Wallace.
Fucking years.
Yeah.
Mike Wallace.
50 fucking years.
Where's Maury Saver?
I love that it was at her, too, because I thought she was... I didn't like her either.
Yeah. And weirdly in this movie, so Stephen Tobolowsky is like fourth billed in the title credits.
Yeah.
And he's barely in the movie.
Yeah. Also, the insider is also Dante Spinelli.
Yeah. Yep.
So...
All right, same let's move on.
All right.
Ratings?
Yeah, ratings. Brandon? Letterboxd. 5.
I think I did 5.
Yeah.
5.
Yeah. I only gave it 4, but I should have given it 5 because it was fucking awesome.
Shame on you, dude.
I don't know what to tell you.
Let's shame him. 5.
I'm going to do 4.5 again.
All right. You don't like to give
it's 5. It's hard to commit. It's hard to commit.
Not on Michael Mann. Just because there's parts that I really don't like on this and Heat. Like things that I'm like, that needs to be cut. So if I feel like that for something at all, then I feel like it doesn't deserve a 5. All
right.
Sorry. Okay. But I still like it as a movie.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right. So what do we want
to... This one's really fucking long too. There.
But I would say it's much more like it engages you more.
Yeah, there's not as much silence in this one.
Like it moves. It's
God in Heat. The last scene. Okay, yes. I like the whole holding hands shit. Fucking
Moby's fine.
Fucking hiding behind one. He goes behind the other one. He's like, oh wait, is he over here? Is he over here? Wait, he's over here.
You could have cut out one of those probably, yeah.
Why is he still doing this part? It doesn't matter.
Wait, so you didn't watch the director's cut of Ali?
I watched a really fucking long Ali movie too.
Okay, well here, we're getting to that. That's the next one.
I'll
so
2000 get into that too.
Okay, yeah. 2001 Ali. This is one not Dante Spinotti, Emmanuel Lubezki.
Yeah.
Lubezki. Which shows because it looks gorgeous.
Yes.
Everything about it.
I got to point out before we start that scene where it's snowing. And
every scene where it's snowing. Yeah. There's a few of the, like every one of them, you're like, oh, that's snow. Yeah. but this is one that I hadn't seen. I hadn't seen Ali. Probably because I was like, Will Smith playing Muhammad Ali. That's like a joke in a movie, right? But he is incredible.
I just opened my mouth in shock.
Yes. Well, it's like a Tropic Thunder thing. Like Will Smith playing Muhammad Ali. That's, you know, you don't know? That's fine.
yeah, no.
The big Hollywood star playing the big, you know, biographical icon. Like,
I mean, there's no way it could have been worse than Muhammad Ali playing Muhammad Ali in The Greatest. So,
yeah.
Here, you needed a personality like that to play Muhammad Ali.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And he is, I mean, he's great. He's amazing. Yeah. There's not enough words to describe how great he is as Muhammad Ali. The mannerisms, the speech, like, he nailed it.
Here's my complaint about Ali. It's really complaint about Spike Lee.
Oh, because Spike Lee was so pissed a white guy would direct a movie about one of the greatest black men? Yeah. Spike Lee gets mad about everything, though.
He does, but at the same time... Well, okay, so I watched the director's cut. Okay. I don't remember. So I haven't seen Ali since I saw it in theaters. Mm-hmm. And then I watched the director's cut. And I don't remember Malcolm X being in the original theatrical cut as much.
He's in a bit, just a bit.
Okay, so this one.
Which one did I see?
I think you saw the director's cut.
Because Malcolm X is in a lot.
He's in it quite a bit. I saw it on Amazon. I was watching, they have to have the theatrical.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it was a theatrical. So I was watching the director's cut. And I'm like, all right, well, so this is like Michael Mann's Malcolm X. And I'm just like, So that kind of rubbed me a little bit.
You saw the director's cut.
Yeah. Well, no, I know it was the director's cut. I watched the director's cut. But I hadn't seen it since I saw the original. So I don't know how much they added in that wasn't in the theatrical release.
Yeah,
But I do enjoy Ali still. But I mean, Spike Lee's just upset about everything anyway.
Yeah.
And I do feel like I understand why he would say he just wanted to direct. He would have wanted to direct it.
Yeah.
But it was also, I felt like Michael Mann redirecting, because there was exact same scenes from Malcolm X and the director's cut of Ali. I'm like, really?
But they were kind of intertwined. So you had to have some of that because you had to build on the Nation of Islam. So like this whole thing is really about Ali and the Nation of Islam. Like that's the biggest through line through the whole movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's boxing and his relationship to the Nation of Islam. And so Malcolm X got him into the Nation of Islam, right? Am I wrong? Yeah, right. So you have to have that at least at the beginning to show that impact. And so his death has a powerful effect on him.
Right.
So, is his death in the theatrical cut? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we talk about...
Okay, so that's what I saw, too.
Can we talk about LeVar Burton as Martha Luther King?
Yes.
who's barely in it.
Non-speaking. Yeah, non-speaking. He's on TV twice. Yeah. Both shots are from, like, a television.
That's awesome. I want to see that movie though.
Wait, so you don't see him assassinated in the
You see him lying dead on the Lorraine. Yeah. But the beginning of the movie is outrageously great.
Yeah,
the movie never tops its first 3 minutes. with Sam Cooke performing as Sam Cooke.
Yeah, and
then you never hear him speak until he like launches into like the heckling stuff, right? Like with Sonny Liston.
Yeah.
Like, and he just launches right into it.
Yeah. Here is an example of, like, I just love all the scenes. Just looking at all the character actors in the background. Like, just like you know, Ron Silver, Jamie Foxx, Paul Rodriguez.
Paul Rodriguez is the weirdest one.
Yeah. Like, what's he doing in this movie? John Voight, Marty Van Peebles.
Oh, God.
Gita Pinkett.
John Voight as Howard Cosell.
Jeffrey Wright.
It's great.
Bruce McGill again. Giancarlo Esposito. LeVar Burton, as I said. There's Ted Levine.
Bruce McGill plays the CIA guy, right?
Yeah.
So.
And the boxing.
Yes.
Michael T. Williams as Don King.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that well-executed boxing since Rocky. Or at least as Raging Bull. But I would say that's different. That's going for a very specific thing, as opposed to this, which is just really great boxing. Like, you don't go in
Gladiator. Cuba.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mama said, knock you out.
But just as far as just like kind of just filming boxing matches, I don't think I've seen anything better than that.
Yeah.
Raging Bull is much more like internalized than this, even though you get
a little
voiceover with this and a couple point of view shots, but that's pretty much it. Other than that, it's just, and the performance of it is amazing. I was bummed for Sonny Liston. Am I the only one that gets sad that he always has a sad look in his eye? Every time they show him, he always like is like furrowing his brow like, oh man.
That's just how Sonny Liston looks.
So this was, again, he teamed up with Eric Roth again for this movie, to write this movie. He teamed up with him for the first time on The Insider. And apparently, the way he teamed up with him was, De Niro always had the script for The Good Shepherd. He always wanted to do that. He either wanted to be in it, but he commissioned it from Eric Roth. Eventually, he directed it with Matt Damon as a lead. But he had been working on it since way back in the day. So I guess De Niro said, hey, this writer's really good. You know, check him out, you know. And he gave him the early draft of The Good Shepherd. And that's how what started their relationship with this. And so Ali and The Insider, both co-written by both of them.
And again, another example where he doesn't know what to do with women since they're all one-dimensional.
Yeah.
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 I think it works a little bit more with a biographical figure.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, you just need to show that he likes women.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's unfortunate that Michael Mann made that choice for all of his other characters. Otherwise, then he came to someone who, like, this actually happened, so he has to portray it, and it just seems like another in a series of choices he made to have women be totally one-dimensional.
I did love Jamie Foxx in this.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
He's really good.
He's really good.
Yeah.
That scene when he's telling him about how he sold the belt is really heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, there's nothing, I have nothing more to say. I love this movie.
Who played, Sports Night or Sports Center?
Howard Cosell, John Voight.
Yeah.
John Voight played him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here, I've got a clip. That's the clip I have.
I wish we were a video podcast, because Jenny's face is like, she did
wait,
like,
what?
It's weird. What? Yeah, it's a weird performance. Yeah.
It's a lot of makeup
I
and a wig.
I loved them together. I loved their interaction together.
Yeah, every time they were buddy-buddy.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I talked to your wife.
I just didn't even, wow, I'm mind blown.
Yeah, here, the only clip I have from it is him when he's coming on Wild Road to Sports to talk about Joe Frazier.
Do you think you're going to jail?
I don't know.
Joe Frazier told me on this show that he could knock you out.
See, there you go agitating. You should have asked Smoking Joe, what have he been smoking? That boy even dreamed he whooped me. He better wake up and apologize. But if I ever was to get in the ring with Joe, here's what you might see. Ali comes out to meet Frazier, but Frazier starts to retreat. If Joe goes back an inch farther, he'll wind up in a ringside seat. Ali swings with his left. Ali swings with his right. Just look at the kid carry the fight. Frazier keeps backing, but there's not enough room. It's only a matter of time before Ali lowers the boom. Ali swings with his right. What a beautiful swing. But the punch lifts Frazier clean out of the ring. Frazier's still rising, and the referee wears a frown, because he can't start counting till Frazier comes down. Frazier's disappeared from view. The crowd is getting frantic, but our radar station's done picked him up. He's somewheres over the Atlantic. Now, who would have thought when they came to the fight, they was going to witness the launching of a black satellite? But don't wait for that fight. It ain't never going to happen. Only thing you could do is wonder and imagine.
So, I want to talk about real quick. Is anybody here boxing fans? Like, outside of zero, nothing.
Jenny. I hated that part.
Okay. No, but I mean, outside of, you just don't like boxing.
No, I just don't like boxing. That's why I didn't care for those scenes at all.
Guys, Brandon?
Yeah, I like boxing. I like more specifically boxing movies.
No. I'm talking about boxing.
Yeah. No, but I think I know where you're going with this.
You, Adam?
Not really. I mean,
for our listeners who don't know, I am black, and I was kind of obligated to talk about boxing every time I got my haircut when I was growing up. So, I mean, I'm familiar with boxing. I remember watching big fights for a while. Yeah. Like, I remember watching when Mike Tyson bit off Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, hair. I saw that, too.
Yeah, I remember.
So, I mean, I've watched boxing, but I do... I think I'm with Brandon. I prefer boxing movies to boxing. I'm never like, oh, I don't even know who the heavyweight champion... I think it's like some Russian guy right now, isn't it?
Something like
Klitschko?
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Ricardo, do you watch boxing?
I do. oh, first Klitschko? Of all, Kevin, do you like...
I like boxing. I'll watch a little bit. I'd actually more like to participate in it.
Yeah. I'd rather watch boxing Me too. Than MMA.
That's what I was going to get to. I feel like boxing is more of a gentleman's sport, where I appreciate the MMA.
Pugilists.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's just more fun to say.
Yeah.
I'm a pugilist.
MMA
I'm
would
a
be
mixed
like
martial
Hulk
artist.
Hogan and stuff, right?
No, that's wrestling.
That's wrestling.
Oh, that's wrestling. What's MMA?
MMA
then?
Is
mixed
like
martial arts.
So Randy Couture.
They do pretty much everything.
Like,
the really gay subtextual sport where it's basically they punch each other really hard.
And then they grab each other and get on the ground.
Yeah, it's a couple bare knuckle punches. And
so
it's a
any
lot of
MMA fans who would like to send hate mail to Brandon.
Yeah. So, yeah, so send your hate mail to Brandon Bennett. This is what I was getting at. I feel like just like on a human evolutionary kind of way, like we need boxing and we need MMA. Like I feel like a lot of people like to think we're really evolved, but we're not. I think deep down, like, because I know some people when they watch boxing they're like, oh, it's really brutal, but to me it's like there's something interesting about that.
Boxing is brutal. But boxing to me isn't as brutal as MMA, where they just like knock down, drag out. Like I'm gonna knee this guy in the face and wrestle him to the ground and then hump his head.
In a fighting sort of like, I mean, if I was a fighter, I'd feel like I'd get MMA because there's, especially when you devote yourself to like, hey, I'm gonna be the best at judo. I'm gonna be the best at Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I'm gonna be the best at this. You feel the need. I feel like all that. That thing they say, like, hey, it's for you to know, but not. Don't just go out there and be a bad guy and be fucking people up in the face. To me, that's what I want to know. I want to know who the best fighter in the world is. That's what I want to know. If I was training one of those martial arts, I'd want to know who is the best. And in the beginning, that's what they were doing. With
Why
like,
you just you, I feel like you're just quoting Warrior.
Warrior.
Or what?
He did quote a line from Warrior. Yeah. He wants to know who the best fighter
is. I want to know who the
it.
Best fighter in the world is. I know, but everybody on my block, we want to know who the best fighter on the block was.
Well
not
I
to
do.
Get on a tangent, though, but that's sports in general.
Yeah,
we have
yeah.
the World yeah. Series and the Super Bowl champions of the world, even though it's not the world.
Yeah.
And neither is boxing the best fighter in the world.
Well, boxing is
boxing
world.
Is
yeah, boxing
world.
Is world.
Well, but... And you kind of play with it. They kind of play with the idea here. It's that he... You know, he was not being allowed to fight because he was avoiding the draft. And so the real champion of the world was not necessarily the real champion of the world because they hadn't fought him yet. That idea.
Yeah.
So you're not going to find who the best, you know, you're going to find who the best one is who likes boxing.
Yeah.
You know, but I also think it's much more, and probably why Michael Mann liked it, it's much more of a mythological sport.
Yeah.
Two guys fighting, and especially with this. On the back, you know, the background with the civil rights movement and Malcolm X and everything.
Yeah.
Like it's really a powerful way to talk about fighting against something.
Yeah.
When you can actually have a fight.
My only
literally have a fight.
My only problem with the movie though is it kind of I don't know, it kind of meanders a little bit to me. Like it's like a mumbling movie. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that
like,
with the director's cut though. I feel like the theatrical cut was much more streamlined.
Really?
I think so.
Okay, well, yeah, because the director's cut, I'm just like, all right, well, where am I? Like, I have to stop and think, like, all right, so this is this fight. Wait, is this the first fight or the second fight? Like, what year is it now? And, like, it just kind of moves around in a weird way. I'm like, all right, I don't know where I am anymore.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't, like, until something major happens, I'm like, all right, I don't know what just happened or what year I'm, oh, he's in court. Okay, so now I know what year it is. So, I don't know. I feel like it could have used subtitles.
Yeah.
To let us know what you
I feel
was.
Like that is a director's cut. At least the one I saw felt
No, I know.
Very,
no, I watched the director's cut. I know that. I went out of my way to watch the director's cut because I wanted to see like what his vision was that wasn't theatrically released.
Yeah. And he always says with like those cuts, he's like, yeah, that was my director's cut too, but this is like my extended director's cut.
Yeah.
But he's never ever had problems with like them recutting his movies and stuff. So
Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah, but he was given time to do that. They extended the release date, actually.
I thought it was just for the... Did they? I thought it was for the DVD.
Oh, you know what? You're right.
It was the DVD.
I misspoke. So what happened with Last of the Mohicans was they gave him a release date, and he had to just kind of cut it and give his cut so they would release it on theaters. But then they let him re-edit it for DVD before it was released. So there you go. But I think that was more of a matter that he it was down to the wire with delivering a cut.
I did read about, and they talked about where they sent someone from the studio to tell him that he was done shooting. He's like, "You need to move on now."
Yeah,
because he was going. And that so was far.
Yeah when he shoot. Yeah, there was an executive that was like, apparently he was doing like 30 takes on each setup.
Yeah,
and there was an executive that got sent out there to go. Like when they got to like 15, that's enough, Michael.
Yeah,
let's move on. But yeah, I never want an executive to say that. To me. All right, I loved it. What's your rating?
I'd give it a 4.
4. All right, Adam.
I'm on the fence between like a 3.5 and a 4.
Okay.
I'm on the fence with a 3.5.
Okay. I'm gonna go with 4.5. I know there's a little bit of problems with it, but it just everything kind of worked for me, like the cinematography, directing, all the acting was top notch for me, and that's what kind of makes it a 4.5.
And I was engaged the whole way through.
Yeah. Jenny,
I went 3.5.
Yeah, was this the hardest one to watch, or which one was the hardest?
No.
That's more like a 4 though for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess on my Michael Mann scale,
your 3.5 is my 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Probably.
Yeah. All right. What are we talking about next?
Next is 2004's Collateral.
But before we get to that, I just want to talk about in 2004, Collateral came out, but he was going to do another movie that I wish he had done. It would have been a different take, and I would have wanted to see that take.
He's going to remake Red Dragon.
No. In 2004, when 2003 really, when they started shooting it, there was two movies that he was going to make, Collateral and The Aviator. He was going to direct The Aviator with DiCaprio.
Oh, that's right. He produced it.
Yeah. It was his, you know, it was the script, I think, was commissioned by DiCaprio and Michael Mann. They were going to do that movie together. But just coming off of Ali, he felt like he was kind of done with the biopics for a while. So he said, I don't want to direct it, but I'll produce it still. And then Martin Scorsese came in. But I really wish he would have directed The Aviator just to see his take on that. You know,
yeah,
that would have been interesting because, you know,
I'm kind of glad we got Collateral though.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah. So let's get to Collateral 2004. What I have and what I read and what I saw in interviews when that first came out, I know that he originally wanted Val Kilmer and Adam Sandler to be the cab driver.
Well, I didn't know about Adam Sandler as a cab driver.
And I even heard Adam Sandler talk about it.
But that makes much more sense than Jamie Foxx.
Yeah. And then, actually, Val Kilmer couldn't do it, and Tom Cruise was going to do it. And I think it was going to be Tom Cruise and Adam Sandler. But Adam Sandler, their schedules, again, didn't work out. And Adam Sandler dropped out. But I think for a while, he started doing the research for Michael Mann. Like, meaning, he started putting in the work. That would have been really interesting.
Driving a cab.
Yeah.
Well, I think it would have been interesting because he'd be more easily able to play an everyman than Jamie Foxx can. Jamie Foxx always looks like... He's so big, like, and he's got the hoodie and the t-shirt on. He just always, he looks like he's, I don't know, he looks like he's undercover. He looks like Tubbs.
I don't understand. What do you mean he's big? He's not a big dude.
Yeah.
He's super muscular.
Not in Collateral. At Collateral, he looks a little, like, chubby.
Yeah, he looks chubby in Collateral. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And he's got that goofy run that he does. I think he should have won an Oscar for Collateral as opposed to Ray.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I agree with that also. I think he's great. Here's my thing. I think he's great. I just think that it's one of the first times it's two kind of superstars as opposed to guys who exemplify the character they're playing. You know what I mean?
Does that make sense at all? He works really well for me in this. I think this is my favorite Jamie Foxx role. Like, I like him as Bundini, but I really love him as Max in Collateral.
I agree.
He plays that. He's like the neat... he's got a plan. He cleans out his cab. Nervous. He's organized. He's nervous. Yeah.
He's good. I think he's really great, actually. I just think as far as Michael Mann's casting has gone, there's a definite scale in his casting choices into using more prominent actors for certain roles.
Oh.
Like if Adam Sandler was a first choice, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
In a way than Jamie Foxx, even though I think Jamie Foxx is amazing in it, and I would agree that he would deserve an Oscar for it.
What are you arguing?
I can't picture.
Yeah. I just want to make it clear that I do
actually,
think he's
I don't
great.
Think I could picture Adam Sandler either.
Yeah, no, I think I would not have taken it seriously.
Sad sack?
I don't. Yeah, I think that's my problem. I don't think I would have taken him seriously.
What about Punch Drunk Love? Did you like him in Punch Drunk Love?
Kind of.
What?
Oh.
I was really young when I saw it.
I want
to
punch you.
Well, that was about the same time as this, right?
Yeah, right. About yeah.
Yeah.
And I was young, so I wouldn't have liked it. If my favorite comedian yes. Adam Sandler had done something like this, I would have been pissed off.
Your favorite comedian?
In like sixth grade. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
he fucking
loved
Adam Sandler.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I
agree.
But this is the easiest one to do a synopsis for.
Yeah.
Vincent Hitman comes to town, hires a cab for a night of murder and.
Hitman.
Hitmaning. Hitman. Yes. And confusion. Murder and confusion.
Yeah. And things go awry for Vincent.
Yes. And actually, the only clip I have from this would be when he first picks him up.
Let's play it.
First time in L.A.?
No. Tell you the truth, whenever I'm here, I can't wait to leave. It's sprawled out, disconnected. You know, that's me. You like it?
It's my home.
17 million people. This is a country be the fifth biggest economy in the world, and nobody knows each other. I read about this guy gets on the MTA here, dies. 6 hours he's riding the subway before anybody notices his corpse doing laps around LA, people on and off sitting next to him. Nobody notices.
Okay, I want to say that this is a really close tie to Heat for me, man.
Yeah, like, me too.
They
yeah.
go together so well.
Yeah,
yeah.
And here's my thing is that I'm from LA and I love this movie.
I think it's a better movie about LA.
Michael yes. Mann, and here's the thing about, somebody's phone's buzzing, not mine. What I like about this movie and about people, I think people that are not from LA capture LA a little better. I think if you're mm-hmm. not from a city, you enjoy certain parts. Because, I mean, there's a lot of... like scenes in this movie where I'm like, oh, I know that. Oh my God, I haven't been there in such a long time. Like, I used to eat tacos around there. Like, I used to fill up my gas around there.
I just watched this before I came over here, and it was the shootout, the awesome big shootout at the
yeah.
end. I was like, holy shit, the exterior club was where I first lived when I moved here.
Really?
Like, right. I was like, oh, shit, really? That's Bliss. I lived right there.
That's funny.
Those fuckers always kept me up at night. Damn you, Tom Cruise, and your shootouts at Bliss. Yeah.
But yeah, so both of these movies are about LA as much as they are about the characters,
mm-hmm.
The city. It's a character in the movie, you know. Just from the beginning, like I love again all the actors that come out, like you know the cab people, the passengers he picks up in the beginning of the film.
Debbie Mazar.
Yeah.
Who's the dude with? I don't remember. I don't know that guy's name.
Bodhi Elfman.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds yeah. Yeah. And
of course,
just
it's
great.
Bodhi Elfman, Scientologist,
and he's looking yeah. at his picture of the of his little island getaway.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the dream. He's a man.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about it.
Well, I think what we should first talk about is this movie would actually be the one that would truly exemplify him as a director because it's probably one of the only films he didn't write. So yeah. he went into this with
that's a good point. Yeah.
Knowing anything, he had the script. He didn't touch the script.
Yeah,
and
Stuart Beatty, right?
Yep.
Well,
Stuart Beatty and
I'm sure he did some.
Frank Darabont wrote a lot, but he didn't get credit.
Yeah, I think Frank Darabont wrote most of it, but he didn't get credit because it was Stuart Beatty's idea. And I think Kevin and I went to a Q&A for something else, but Stuart Beatty was one of the screenwriters.
Mm-hmm.
40 Days a Night. 40
Days a Night. Or 30 Days a Night.
He talked about how he got the idea for Collateral, about how he was literally just driving a cab, and the original movie took place in New York. And he was riding around in a cabin, and I'm like, and he said, that's so weird that we get in these cars with strangers. Like, I mean, they're cab drivers, but they're strangers. Like, how does he know I'm not a killer? Or how do I know he's not a killer?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the idea, like, sparked for him. And it's a great concept. And I love the fact that it takes place over one night.
Yeah, Michael Mann has said it takes place on the night between January 24th and the 25th of 2004. And yeah. I think that's because there's a sign, I think it's the subway sign, that gives the date. So it's like, that's the date of it.
And Tom Cruise is also known for like researching the crap out of things.
He's the actor's equivalent of Michael Mann.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it comes to research and like and diving deep into the thing you're doing.
Yeah.
And he is amazing in this.
Oh yeah.
Did you guys watch the special feature on the DVD where he delivers like a package in the costume? Was that not your DVD?
I watched the movie. I ate dinner and I came over here. I didn't have time to watch special features.
Okay.
So and Savannah doesn't like Tom Cruise or Jamie Foxx.
So oh.
Watching the movie in and of itself was kind of pushing the limit.
Wow. So he's doing the research, and the key about Tom Cruise is that he's Tom Cruise. You know what I mean? And so what he did is Michael Mann told him, you have to be able to be... just blend in. You have to, that's the key to this character. You have to blend in. And you don't know what that is because you're Tom Cruise. So figure that out. And so the makeup department stuff started developing the beard and the hair. And so he'd wear like those camera sunglasses, eyeglasses that have the little camera. And he'd go and he'd do like deliveries and stuff in like different places in LA and in costume. And most of the time he would not get recognized. And of course, if you went to Hollywood and stuff, people would be like, "Oh," but he went to like real places in LA, meaning not your typical West Hollywood and stuff. He went to like the places in the movie. He'd go like to like Hispanic neighborhoods and stuff, and be delivering stuff, and nobody fucking batted an eyelash. They were like, so that was really interesting to me how he really kind of went really deep with his research and stuff. And it's funny if you watch the commentary on the DVD, like they knew exactly where this guy was born, where he went to school, how his parents treated him. How, like, when his mother died, how many years he served in the military, everything. Like, everything was, like, apart from the script that he, you know, he didn't write, he had so much stuff, like, accumulated in research. Yeah,
Tom said, like, his first day meeting Michael, he, like, I think he walked up and handed him, like, a 20-page, like, biography on Vincent.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, he comes in as fully formed as any iconic character, like, Snake Plissken.
Yeah.
Or, like, Jack, like, anyone who just comes out fully formed. They have a history. You don't know what it is, but it influences everything about them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just the fact, like, again, this goes back to the training where Tom Cruise training with real, like, live rounds, you know? And like, every move he does in rehearsal, he did in the club. He did, like, and if you notice, like, just how, like, precise and how no movement is wasted.
Yes.
Like, especially in the alley, the shootout in the alley.
Oh, yeah. That's the one I was thinking
of. The way he pulls the gun and, like, leans it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how he said in the preparation of that, Tom Cruise could hit bullseye without sighting the target off the hip, shooting off the hip. He could hit it. He could hit the bullseye.
And in Club Fever, just like the ferocity with which he takes down each successive guy.
Yeah.
Like, and he gets that face just like when he just like stomps on his head after knocking him down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's just like this tiny like package of fierce. Like, and he's got the classic run. Get some good running in the movie.
Yep.
That still run.
Yeah. And just like it just everything is designed to like a lot of hitman like stereotypes in movies are like, oh, they're this and they're really cool and this. But his thing was like, I wear a gray suit because they blend in. What did he look like? I don't know. He had a gray suit. He had, I don't know, gray hair or something. Like, you can't, there's no identifiable, like, besides the fact that he's Tom Cruise, there's no identifiable, like, anything. Like, his suit like blends in, his face blends in. You couldn't describe him really. If you even if you're trying to describe Tom Cruise, you couldn't describe him as his character.
Yeah.
And everything works for me in this movie. Like, everybody was great. All the character actors in it. Again, Mark Ruffalo talked about and Pete Berg talked about how he had them training like days and weeks of like how to shoot. And he's like, my character doesn't fucking touch his gun. And he's like, I'm an expert marksman because of this movie.
Bruce McGilligan as the FBI.
Yeah.
And I love how like the two of them, I mean, they are amazing together, Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise. Just the way throughout the movie they just slowly unfold each other's bullshit.
Yeah.
And expose both of them for like how full of shit they both are.
Yeah.
See, for me, this, it's weird, but like, so this is my the end of my trifecta of my favorites. So it's Heat, Thief, and Collateral.
Okay.
So all the single titles, the single word titles. But like this is for me is like the most, there's the most emotion in it. Like I feel like more the most emotionally invested in the character, especially with Max and just Vincent sitting in the cab, like just giving him shit about his life and riding him and like his kind of turn at the end. Like, all right, well, like it just makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And just having like him sitting on his shoulder nagging him.
And I'm going to insert this in post, but I'm going to put another clip in. I don't know if you have it, but of the scene that is to me the most like a actor that comes in and is so prepared and just strikes fear into you without fucking standing up. Javier Bardem.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't stand up from where he's sitting down, and he is the scariest mother effer. And not only, so here's the thing, that Javier Bardem speaks Spanish. He's a Spaniard, but he didn't speak, what he's speaking in that movie is Mexican Spanish, which is really different. And for people, like, I know Spanish, and I couldn't do, like, you know, Castilian, or I couldn't do Mexican Spanish. Like the dialect he's speaking is very specific. The words he's using is very specific, and that is all Michael Mann. Yeah. He talked to certain people that he shouldn't have been talking to. But he's the scene with him and Jamie Foxx where they're talking about
he's playing, Christmas. When he's playing as Vincent.
Yes, and the story Fox he's turns telling. It on. Yeah,
I feel like Javier Bardem like. Brings Jamie Foxx's game up. He's like, oh shit, and he's like, you need to tell that dude to put his gun away behind me.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's a good scene.
That place is actually by my parents' house. So it's funny because I'm like, oh, I know Pico Rivera. But yeah, that scene kind of really like blew me away when I first saw the movie. I was like, what the hell? Like, this guy's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
My first note when I rewatched it was Jason Statham.
Yes.
I totally forgot Jason Statham's in this for half a second.
And I think he cast him specifically because he wanted somebody like really memorable. Yeah. And I feel like
that's Jason that individualized thing.
Yeah. And also like you're like, oh, that guy's his handler. Like, what's his story? Everybody you meet in this movie, you want to know their backstory.
I want more adventures of Vincent.
Yeah. And Vincent and Jason Statham. Yeah. I want to see like a prequel to this.
What's his name? The guy, the jazz club dude.
That's a twofer also.
Yeah.
Miami Vice. In Ali playing, he's in Miami Vice also.
Yeah. He's in Miami
Vice.
Henry
Shikanda Bailey.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
When he's talking about Miles Davis.
Yeah. I'm
like,
yeah.
That's like,
it's. No, Barry Chewbacca Henley.
Oh, wow.
You were close. You had the
first and last name initials. Yeah. So I think we should mention. This is the start of the whole digital thing.
HD.
Because he filmed the night scenes in digital. I would say this is the only one where that was successful.
I would disagree, but okay.
I think the interiors were shot 35. The club scenes were shot 35. The exteriors at night were all shot digitally.
The only one of his?
The only one of his.
Really?
That I think looked good, like it helped. It looked good. It was a good decision.
As much as I hate Miami Vice,
this stuff
looks cool.
Well, yeah, but he's also playing with a different thing here, and we can bridge that into Miami Vice, I guess, because we've been talking for a while. He said he wanted to look into the night on Collateral with the digital, and on Miami Vice, he wanted to give the daytime a kind of shine and brightness that you couldn't do on film.
Yeah,
like the digital just carries with it. Just the
Also got that weather, the Florida weather.
Yes,
right?
Yes, the Florida weather. Clouds. Yes,
The stuff in that. I liked that.
But yeah, the way the sun will like shine off a thing, and then it's super dark with the coming cloud. Mm-hmm. Here.
But this is a great example of like. This is one of the first films, one of like the three first films to use like digital the right way. Like this was the proper way to use HD.
I love it those scenes in the cabs where you can see them in the foreground. You see out into LA in the background and it looks like streets that I've lived on. I'm like, yeah, that my apartment was right over
there. The coyote shot.
Yeah. The coyote shot. Yeah. That's like the perfect summary where it goes from the club to the street and you see the coyote. I'm like, that's Los Angeles.
And it's true. Like, I remember people going like, that's bullshit. It's a city. Like, and be like, no, I've fucking seen that. I've been driving down fucking Ventura or wherever and seen a fucking coyote in the street. I've almost ran over a coyote.
Well, and that's exactly what happened.
The
coyotes were running across the street. They're like, oh shit, film that. And they did, because it was just a digital camera. They didn't have to load anything or set up anything. They could just film it. So should we move that into Miami Vice? Or does anyone have anything to say? Oh, Letterboxd, and then...
One thing I would like to say, I think the reason why digitally this and Miami Vice work is because of a cinematographer.
Yeah.
Dion Bebe did this, and he did the digital Miami stuff. Vice.
And I think Paul Cameron did the film stuff. Yeah. Two cinematographers.
I just think it works because it was a specific choice.
Yeah.
Like, he did one thing for interiors, another thing for exteriors, because it gave it a specific look. And
it also helps that this movie is good.
Yes. Yeah. That does help. Yes, I have a much higher tolerance than with the next thing.
Is that the next one?
Yep. Yeah.
All right. So, rating? Brandon?
Five out of five.
Adam, five?
Five.
4.5.
What?
I can't do five.
That's a five, though.
Yeah.
Is this movie short? So, is there anything you didn't like?
I would say if we can talk about the relationship.
What you didn't like.
This is the one where I buy the relationship because there is no relationship. It's a desire.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything else is he nails the desire part.
Yeah.
But then it's just the relationship happens. But this, it's always desire, which is more tragic and affecting, I think.
What is your gripe with this movie? I mean,
I mostly liked it. There's not much like a couple things, you know, where like the phone thing at the end, that was shitty. He doesn't have one, and the one guys that he finds doesn't have any service. Like, that's fucking cheap as shit. Like,
I gave it a five, but there's a lot of coincidence in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he just happens to pick up the woman, and then he just happens to pick up the guy who's hired to kill the woman he just picked up.
It was like a whole, like, oh, obviously she's gonna be the next person he's gonna kill. Duh. Like, that was an obvious kind of thing. I don't know.
This is that weird transitional time when no one knew how to handle cell phones in a movie.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I was trying to figure out, how old this one really was compared to cell phone usage.
That was about
and stuff.
The same time, yeah.
And then the whole, like, it's really convenient that she wasn't at her desk when he went to go kill her the first time. And
yeah.
That I'm not a big Jada Pinkett Smith fan either, to be honest.
To be honest, she was good in this, her whole, like... rapport with him in the cabin at the beginning, like, totally worked for me.
It was really good.
And I'm not a fan of hers at all.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't like Peaches?
Low down, dirty shame. Yeah. Thank you. Same page.
You ain't got no job. You ain't got no car. You ain't got no Peaches.
My other thing is Mark Ruffalo steals some of the scenes in this movie for me.
I still feel bad about when he gets shot. I'm like, oh, Mark,
I know. That was also a cheap shot. I was like, come on, he could have run away. Just shot him in the knee. Come on. I know.
I still feel bad.
It was a lot of like, I hate that feeling of uncomfortable, like everything is wrong is happening to this guy. Like, he's trying to get help and he gets robbed, and then like everything, and it's just like the most uncomfortable feeling where I'm like, nothing is going right for him, and I just feel bad. He doesn't even have his picture to look at anymore. Like, I just want him to feel better. It was that whole thing. Like, I hate that uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah. I feel.
But, I mean, it's good that he can do that, I guess. I mean, that's a good thing. Good feeling to get. I just hate it.
You hate that it takes you there.
Yeah, yeah.
This movie reminds me a little bit of, like, After Hours, of how I feel with that movie. Like, I'm like, oh. It's just, like, one bad thing after another. But, Mark Ruffalo, like, again, he always talks about how much he loved working Michael Mann, but it was, like, a lot of work for, like, he's in like three scenes. And all the hair work for me. Mark Ruffalo looks completely different than he does in every other movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. That's really specific. So, so you talked about the ratings. Should we move on?
Let's do it. Okay. So now we're going to backtrack a little bit because he produced it.
Yes.
He didn't ever write or direct any, which really bums me out.
So I figured it out. I did the research.
You did figure out? Okay, so we're talking about Miami Vice.
Yes. So Miami Vice.
1984 is Miami Vice.
Television
series.
He read the script, and he loved the pilot was a two-hour movie.
Oh, this is the Gold Coast thing?
What Gold Coast thing?
There was a script called Gold Coast?
No. This is Miami Vice. So he reads the two-hour pilot, and he's like, I want to make this into a movie. This is great. Just a little modification. This is a perfect movie. And they're like, well, we're already making that. NBC's interested in making that into a TV show. And he's like, crap, this is an amazing project. And that's how he got involved. He said, like, well, if I can't direct it, I just want to be involved. And that's how he got involved in producing.
Yeah. The apocryphal story is that Brandon Tartikoff just said, passed a napkin at a dinner table to a producer and said, to Anthony Yakovitch, and said, MTV Cops. Mm-hmm. Yeah. and thus Miami Vice was born.
It's like sold.
And it is, if no one out there has seen Miami Vice, it is a really great television show. It is, I mean, yes, it is MTV Cops. It's all about like music and Miami of the time. But Miami Vice like made all of that. The pastel, the pastel tone of the 80s and everything. There's a reason why Miami Vice
proudly dressed like Crockett and Tubbs.
Yes. And okay, I will play a clip from the most epic part of the pilot, Brother's Keeper, when Crockett and Tubbs are going to get Calderon.
Let's do this.
Okay. No. Oh, and they stop at a payphone, and he calls his ex-wife.
Sonny does.
Sonny, yeah, Sonny Crockett calls Don Johnson calls his ex-wife.
This is in the middle of a Phil Collins song, In the Air Tonight.
Yes, you'll hear it in the background. No.
Hello.
Caroline.
Sonny.
I need to know something, Caroline. The way we used to be together. I don't mean lately, but before. It was real, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. You bet it was. Sonny, what's wrong?
Nothing, Caroline.
Awesome, dude. I want to go see this again.
Yes. I've seen the pilot more than anything else.
All right. Let's talk about Miami Vice, the movie.
Okay. Here's why Miami Vice, the movie, is terrible.
Well, wait. Let's talk about, how it starts. This is what happened. Jamie Foxx was on set for Collateral, and they were just talking during lunch, and they said, you know, I love Miami Vice, he said. And he's like, oh, I wonder when somebody's going to remake it. And he's like, oh, no one's asked me yet, you know, like for the because I think he owned part of the rights. And he said, well, if anybody should remake it, you should. Jokingly, Michael Mann said, I will if you will be in it. And they're like, all right, we'll write it and I'll be in it. And that's how it was born, out of a lunch.
Man, you can tell they really cared about it when they developed the project.
They were really, really invested in that.
So what do you think it's a bad movie? Because I'm going to give you my argument of why it's a really good movie.
I know. I feel bad because part of the reason why I'm going to say it's bad is part of the reason why you say it's good, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's called Miami Vice. Mm-hmm. Miami, that like means something. Like, did anyone ever watch Fastlane on Fox?
Yeah.
Yes.
The LA version of
Bill
Bellamy.
Bill Bellamy and
Peter
Facinelli.
Yeah,
I watched
the guy who got called a fag by somebody. Yeah,
yeah. Tiffany Amber Thiessen was like their chief,
their handler.
Yes, she was Edward James Olmos.
Yeah.
Oh no!
And I actually,
so, yes,
really,
I did watch.
Yes, okay. So Miami Vice was just—it had great music. It had great scripts. For like being undercover cops, mm-hmm. and amazing guest stars, and it was fun. And I don't think we've mentioned that about how Michael Mann has zero sense of humor in talking about all this. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason why I don't connect to a lot of the stuff, because there's no humor at all.
Mm-hmm.
And Miami Vice, the movie, is not fun at all. Mm-hmm. Like nothing is fun. Like nothing is, and I'm not asking for winking or anything. Mm-hmm. But it's
just dead serious.
It's dead serious, and there's no plot to be dead serious about. Like, it's so bare bones.
So, what was the second thing? You said two.
Did I say two?
I thought that you did. I may have just imagined. Maybe I want two reasons. Know.
Give me
bad music. It's got Linkin Park in
okay.
it.
Oh, my God, yes. I wrote that down.
Linkin Park sucks.
Well, because it's not Linkin Park, though.
It's the Linkin Park Jay-Z mix.
Yeah.
Well, there is that, but there's also... shit, what is
can
it?
Can I get an encore?
Another terrible song in an hour 18, Chris Cornell Macho Radio Bullshit.
Yeah.
It's all Audio Slave.
So that's Collateral.
No,
there's Audio Miami Slave Vice. In Miami
there's
Vice.
There's two Audio Slave songs in Miami Vice.
Yeah.
And it is horrific.
When I was rewatching, I was like, is he using Audio Slave again? Ugh.
And it's a thing known for...
I can sit
for...
through Audio Slave more than I can sit through Linkin Park.
Let me just quickly tell you why this is a really, really good movie. And here's the two biggest problems with this movie. I'll start off with that. One, shouldn't have been called Miami Vice. That was the biggest mistake for this movie is being called Miami Vice. That's why everybody hates it. Two, the music. And I'll agree with you. This is where the downfall started with the music.
Yeah.
But this movie is really great because it's just about people that are undercover. And it shouldn't have been called Miami Vice because it's just two dudes. And a lot of the movie doesn't take place in Miami. You know what I mean? Like, it takes place in Dominican Republic. Yeah. But I just rewatched it, and I liked it when it first came out. But my thing was, hey, I didn't grow up with Miami Vice. I watched it as an adult, so I was able to kind of separate the two. And this is a good movie, but it's a procedural. It's like The Wire.
Oh man!
Yeah, I think he went.
It's
down
like the Wire of movies. Yeah, because everything's really, really slow.
No one would have ever said on The Wire. Now there's undercover, and then there's you don't know which way is up, which doesn't make any sense.
Plus,
I don't know what that means.
There's chemistry between the main characters on The Wire, the main detectives. There's no chemistry between.
Yeah,
there's no chemistry at all.
I feel like they just started working together.
The third thing is Jamie Foxx
storyline to like.
Yeah.
Where things propel forward and you know what's happening and you care about the people that things are happening about on The Wire. And like you can pick up on the lingo. Here they're just saying things and stuff's just happening. I'm like, I don't know who the fuck that guy is. I don't know what they're doing. I don't care. Is this movie over yet?
And
oh, hey, that was a cool shootout. Oh, no, it's still not over yet.
And here's the thing. If you listen to the commentary, like everything is so like researched and specific.
Oh, yeah.
It's all based on things that you know, either really happened or characters that really existed, and
the special features about the making of the movie were infinitely more interesting than the movie itself.
I think that attention to detail ultimately kills it. I have the same problem with the next movie also, but I think if you spend too much time focusing on what the reality of a situation is, you're never going to get to anything else that's interesting.
Yeah.
But also, did anybody else watch the director's cut? Because
I did.
Oh my god,
with the boat
this
race
is even worse. Yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, if we look at his best movie, the attention to detail is there and he has a story.
Yeah.
So what the hell happened with this movie?
I'll give you that, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good, but I don't call it Miami Vice. I just call it the movie with the two dudes.
I never seen this show. And I know nothing about the show at all.
You hated this movie.
And I hated this movie. So that does not apply to me at all.
And I don't, and I'm not like mad that it's not what the show was.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
I just find the disparity between how great the show is and how terrible the movie is to be so fascinating.
I remember the lyrics to Heartbeat better than I remember episodes of Miami Vice.
Can you give me this, that the cinematography was really good?
Yes. No.
Yes and no.
I don't like the digital. There's so much that is people fade when they move. This happens some in Collateral with the digital cinematography where there's that motion blur with people and that takes me out of it.
I enjoyed this because it gave everything like color, like of how things really look like. Some places look like a shitty red, some places look like a shitty green.
I could use some of the scenes as like a screensaver or something.
Yeah.
Because it's really pretty. But like as soon as like a go fast boat shows up, I'm like, fuck that shit.
When it's like daytime and there's bright sun out and everything is lit full tilt, it looks great. But other stuff I don't think it does.
All right. Well, let's not linger too much on this movie because we're going on 3 hours on this podcast.
Yeah, Jesus
so,
Christ.
So rating real quick.
Point two.
What? You got to give a
one.
Half. Point two. He's
can I do a half?
You can do half. Yeah, half. You can do half. Okay, Adam.
I actually gave it a two because I did like the shootouts.
The raid on the mobile home is pretty great.
Yeah.
Okay, two.
Yeah, I'd give it 2 stars.
That is pretty great.
I'm pulling mine. I think Jenny. What did you give?
Point five.
Point so
hated
half.
It.
Really
hated it.
I do. I hate the movie.
Could not get through
shootouts
it.
Were cool. Like I would just watch the shootouts.
Made myself get through it. Didn't care about a single character. Didn't care that she would have died or not.
Yeah.
You have to go see her. What was that scene? What was that last scene? Why is he walking Why is that the last scene that he's walking up to the hospital? Seriously, yeah. That is what we're seeing? Yeah. Yeah. Walking up to the hospital, boom, black. Are you serious? Yeah. I don't understand.
It's really bad.
How that's how we did it. Oh,
and I'm glad we played that in the air tonight from Miami Vice, a television series, because they have that atrocious cover during the last shootout. That is, is it Audio Slave again? No, I think might be. Or is that the Linkin Park?
No. I think it's more Linkin
Park. Is it Linkin Park and Audio Slave?
So,
is it a Spawn soundtrack situation?
So we're going to rape your ears.
No, this, it was BB with the cinematography on Miami Vice. So,
what did you rate it?
I'd give it 3.5 stars.
Okay.
Yeah, so there you go. All right, so what are we going to do next? The last movie?
This is, well, it's the last movie. He directed the pilot of a television show after this, but the last movie is 2006, Public Enemies.
Yes.
I have no clip.
That's fine.
Would someone like to give a synopsis?
I mean, it's the story of John Dillinger.
Yeah.
And Melvin Purvis.
And Melvin Purvis is the man chasing, I mean, he was chasing a lot of gangsters at the time. He was kind of like...
Totally forgot Channing Tatum.
Yes. Pretty Boy Floyd. Yeah. Just like Jason Statham, I was like, Channing Tatum!
Yeah. Well... A lot of guys that you're like, oh, Stephen Dorff is in this.
Yeah, I forgot he was in this. Okay, I'm not going to lie. I didn't hate it as much this time around.
Me neither.
I was like, oh, hey, this is not as bad as I remember it being. I still think that shootout at the cabin looks terrible.
Yes.
It's I think the whole movie looks terrible. God-awful, but that's the worst part.
It is the worst part.
That night. Yeah. It's like, okay, all the night stuff in Collateral looks amazing, and then you make this, it just looks like shitty... Film school video.
We could go out with Ricardo's SLR and do something better tonight.
It looks so bad.
Yeah, it looks really bad.
Okay, let's talk about all the great acting going on here. We got all the Jason Clarke, who people are now discovering. Yeah, we discovered him back then. Jason Clarke's amazing. Johnny Depp did a really good job playing John Dillinger.
This is one of his rare, not batshit insane roles.
Yeah.
Where he's a little bit more controlled. Yeah.
A couple of the guys that stood out for me, Giovanni Ribisi, kind of stole some of the scenes he was in for me.
Yeah, he's really good.
He's really good. Rory Cochran's in this.
Rory
Cochran. Sean Hatosi.
What's his name? He plays a general in Avatar. He plays one of the...
Stephen Lang?
Yeah, Stephen Lang.
Yes. Yes. He's really good.
He's so awesome.
The last scene in the movie?
Yes.
Got me a little weepy, dude.
Yes.
I forgot Carey Mulligan was in this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so sorry,
John Dillinger.
John Dillinger. Oh, the other guy who I loved was the guy who played.
Stephen Graham.
Stephen Graham.
Yes,
he's so good.
He played. I thought Billy Crudup was a really good J. Edgar Hoover.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was
conniving, and I just hated him so much.
And that thick neck.
Oh yeah, yeah.
With what's the like something about like the hair?
Yeah.
And the neck.
That square J. Edgar Hoover face.
Who did Stephen? What's his name play?
Babyface Nelson.
Nelson. Yeah. And the joke he's telling, he's like, "Yeah, hey, you want to see me do James Cagney?
My Jimmy Cagney? Yeah." Yeah. That was an improv, I guess.
Yeah. He's great. He's amazing.
He's Capone.
Al Capone. Yeah. In and what's it called? Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
He always astonishes me of how like badass he just comes in, just kicks ass,
and he does a great American accent.
Yeah. Everybody's great in this. I don't mind the cinematography just because I like here's the thing that I like when directors take risks. And yeah, this may have not worked out, but when else have you ever seen a period piece be done in digital? That's interesting to me.
I know what you mean, and I like that idea because he's like, oh, I want you to feel like you're in 1933.
Yeah.
But
it's the opposite.
I know. What it does is okay. I feel like it's like the 48 frames thing.
Yeah.
When you do that, everything looks fake. Like the cars look a little fake. The outfits look like costumes. Like the props. Because
it looks like video. It looks like
TV.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you
don't. But only in some moments. Because it works for me in some moments. But then, like that shootout, it looks terrible. But like the opening looks awesome.
It works for me. Yeah.
Yeah. The opening is amazing.
Yeah. So it's hit or miss for this whole entire movie. But I like that he took the risk to do it that way. I wish more people
but
took risks.
Wasn't like the Curious Case of Benjamin Button was shot digital because David Fincher's never going back to film.
Yeah.
And that doesn't look like shit.
This did have like a History Channel type of feel to it at points.
Yeah. Real Hatfields and McCoys.
It looked like a shitty reenactment.
Yeah. It did. Yeah.
Christian Bale kicked ass in this movie.
Yeah, he's good. He always kind of plays the same thing, though. He's...
was it me or the last scene before Dillinger's killed have like a really interesting like a Untouchables feel to it?
It does.
Like at the end with the carriage, you know?
Oh, I hate that shot though. The slow motion fall
with the
CG blood.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Sorry, we're like, mixing two things.
The tension at the end of Public Enemies feels a lot like the end of The Untouchables to me.
The cutting back and forth between where the different guys are positioned and seeing him and walking out of the theater.
Yeah, and the lighting of the cigar.
Yeah.
Or just Stephen Lang.
Yeah.
Just him hanging out in the corner. Like, if I ever see him and he's like on the edge or something, I'd be like, keep him over there.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Don't let him sneak up behind me.
And that interrogation scene is intense.
Oh, when he like slaps her around?
Yeah.
I mean, that's brave of them both. Both actors. I mean, brave on her to let... a lot of that was not pulled slaps.
Yeah, I could see that.
That was like a fucking slap, dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, good on her to trust that actor to do that. And, you know, that's difficult.
But it plays well.
Yeah, it plays really well. And it works when, like, he carries her out, you know, of the of that room. I want to go with ratings or anything else you want to talk about? Everyone's great in this. Again, I can't stop talking about all the actors, you know, that have just small little scenes that kick ass.
There's enough things in it that as soon as I start getting tired of it, something will kick back into gear again. Like, I'll get a little tired, and then it'll be the prison escape with the wooden gun.
Yeah.
And that one's funny because they couldn't do it as he really did it because it would be more unbelievable. Because he held like 17 cops hostage with a wooden gun. And Michael Mann's like, no one's going to believe that. We just got to have three.
But everything, this movie works for me. And the more I see it, the more it works. And Jenny and I got to see a couple different cuts. One of them was more of a love story. And then one of them was more like an action movie.
How did you feel about her in it?
I liked the love story part of it.
Yeah.
Actually, and the first cut
of it?
Yeah. I should probably actually see it again because I can't remember what's in the final one and what was in the one that I saw.
Yeah.
But I like that part. There are of course things that were like, I'm bored now of this.
It's still the thing of like he chooses her and then they're together.
Yeah. It wasn't, there's not, still not much there.
Yeah.
Even with the before part.
Yeah.
There wasn't much of a love story. It was just a little bit more and it worked. Okay.
And
because you don't really want much of a love story in this. You don't really care enough. You wanted more of the action.
Like Heat. You just need it enough.
Yeah.
To make the things work about the story.
Yeah.
Like it needs to be enough of a distraction for their goal. That man thing.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I think like if that theory holds true, this is the ultimate example of it. When it comes down to when they cut between him and Manhattan Melodrama and they're talking about, you know, like, you know, ending on their own terms and cutting to him and just like the scenes play perfectly. I mean, the fact that was actually the movie, I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Because that whole sequence really works. So you really feel bad when he comes out of the theater.
Yeah. So let's do ratings. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
This is a good way to end. I feel like this was like, we don't hate it. We don't love it. It's just like, it's solid, good movie.
Like Adam, I liked it better the second time.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know
why. Each time I watch it, I like it even better. So your letterbox rating?
3.5.
3.5.
I was really pleasantly surprised. I was like, I remember really hating this movie. I gave it a 4 this time. Yeah. I really liked it.
3.5.
I give it a 4. I dug. Yeah,
I went 3.5 as well.
That's like a 4 in my scale.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Let's all add 0.5 to Jenny's scale. Like it doesn't even matter.
No, I mean like
we choose you.
Well, you said at the beginning that you could never go above a certain level for a Michael Mann movie.
So I'm just I'm adjusting for inflation here. Okay, so
right, but you can't adjust it compared to like other movies.
No.
On a Michael Mann scale, I guess you can.
But not
on a Letterboxd scale.
I don't want to drag it out anymore, but we can't go this long without at least mentioning the last thing he directed was the pilot of Luck.
Yes, yes.
The David Milch HBO series on horse racing that ended up killing so many horses they canceled the show.
Hey, I'm okay with that. No, I'm kidding.
Well, apparently he blames TMZ for the show getting canceled.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah. But, I mean, I love Luck. I mean,
it was pretty good.
It was good.
Yeah, the pilot, I think the pilot was probably the best episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Digital again.
But it looked good.
Yeah, it looked really good. So, good list, you know, good, thanks for Brandon. Thanks to Brandon for starting this series up. We'll try to do one director every other month, just because it takes a while to catch up on all the films.
Maybe these will be two-parters.
Yeah, I think this, by the time this is edited, this will be a two-parter. By the way,
well, seriously, if we do a director who has more movies in this.
Well, I know that's the thing. I'm like, this will be a good one because we can just breeze right through. But we have a lot to say about Michael Mann.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll do all the plugs. You could find us on Twitter at The Film Podcast. You could find me on Twitter if you want at Ricardo ULTRERES.
I guess I'm at Jhenigh JHNEIGH.
I mean, I haven't checked in it forever, but I think my Twitter handle is at BL Bennett. Two N's and two T's.
Yeah,
I think is my name.
Benette.
I'm one of the Adam Scotts on Twitter. I don't remember which.
Are you an Adam Scott?
I think I am.
There might be an Adam underscore Scott. In there.
Underscore Scott.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just Google Adam Scott, and you'll find me eventually.
One of them's him.
Kevin?
Well, I just checked it. I'm at K Zuberbier. That's ZUBERBIER.
Cool. Well, and all these links, and we'll have some stuff on there on our website. You could check all that out. All our links, all our Letterboxd links, stuff. At thefilmpodcast.com. So, until next time, hey, you, have a good week.